All right, everybody, Logan Alex CPA here. Today's video is all about how you can prepare for next year's tax season now. I know the end of the year is still a couple months or so away, but I hate to break it to you. Here's the facts. If your tax planning begins a couple weeks before April 15th, then you're doing it wrong. If you are serious about minimizing your tax liability and being proactive about your tax situation, rather than playing the refund guessing game next April, you need to prepare for next year's tax season now. At a basic level, this means doing things like checking your tax withholdings and adjusting your Form W-4 if necessary, making a list of all the companies, such as your employer, your bank, your stockbroker, from whom you are expecting to receive a tax form next year, and considering increasing your contributions to your workplace 401k or other tax advantage retirement plan. At a more advanced level, this means thinking ahead about what tax deductions and credits you may be eligible for on your 2021 tax return and taking steps now to maximize those benefits. I'm going to talk about some specific benefits in this video and how to maximize them. But before getting into all that, it's important that you understand what tax deductions and tax credits are and what they're worth to you, because we're going to be talking about a lot of them in this video. So let's start with defining what tax deductions and tax credits are, because you need to understand that to understand the rest of this video. So let's get these terms straight right off the bat. A tax deduction is a tax benefit that reduces the amount of your income that's subject to tax. So let's say you're single and your taxable income is $9,000 without a particular deduction. Because you're in the 10% tax bracket, your tax liability for the year would be $900. But wait, you forgot about that 1098E from your student loan servicer. You dig it up, it says you paid $1,000 in student loan interest. Because you're eligible for the student loan interest deduction, your taxable income is now $8,000. That's your original $9,000 taxable income minus the $1,000 student loan interest deduction. So what's your tax liability now? Your liability is now $8,000 times 10% or $800. So how much actual tax benefit dollars back in your pocket did that deduction provide you? $100. That's the difference between your old tax liability and your new tax liability. Therefore, in general, the actual tax benefit afforded to you by a particular tax deduction is the amount of the deduction itself multiplied by your marginal tax rate, which is generally the tax bracket you are in, unless the deduction moves you into a lower tax bracket, in which case the math is a little bit more involved. So if you're in the 10% tax bracket and you're eligible for a $1,000 deduction, that deduction will generally be worth $100 in actual cash back in your pocket. A tax credit, on the other hand, is a tax benefit that gives you a dollar-for-dollar reduction in your tax liability equal to the credit amount. This is a little bit easier to understand. There's less math involved. Let's say, again, that you have a $9,000 tax liability for the year without a particular credit. A $1,000 credit, then, will directly decrease your tax liability to $8,000. So if I could magically give you the choice between a $1,000 deduction and a $1,000 credit, generally speaking, you probably want to go with the credit. All right, with that explanation out of the way, let's get into the actual strategies. Number one, start tracking your unemployment benefits. If you received unemployment benefits in 2020, you're probably overjoyed to hear that the American Rescue Plan Act excluded the first $10,200 of unemployment benefits from federal income tax for tax year 2020. While this benefit has not been extended to 2021, one thing you really want to keep track of is how much money you collected from unemployment in 2021. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why do I have to keep track of this? Won't my state send me a form 1099-G for 2021 telling me how much they paid me in unemployment during the year? The answer to that question is, of course, yes, your state will send you a form 1099-G indicating how much it thinks it paid you in 2021 unemployment benefits. But here's the thing. Due to the beefed up benefits implemented in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, beefed up unemployment benefits, right? The extra $300, $400 payments, right, per week. Due to all these benefits, fraudulent unemployment claims went through the roof in 2020 and continued into 2021. That means that it's possible that some fraudster used your social security number to file a fraudulent unemployment claim in your name. This is why it's important for you to keep your own records of how much unemployment you collected in 2021, and then compare that amount to the 2021 Form 1099-G that your state is going to send you. If the amounts are different, alert your state unemployment office immediately and request a corrected 1099-G. So start adding up your unemployment figures now and keep track of these amounts so you have them ready next tax season. And this piece of advice goes really for all tax forms, right? People make mistakes, companies make mistakes, accounting firms make mistakes, fraud happens, right? Don't just accept tax forms blindly, double check them. Strategy number two is to see if you qualify for the recovery rebate credit and make moves to maximize it. So if you didn't get the third stimulus payment or you received less than the full amount of $1,400 for each of you, your spouse, and any dependents you claim, you may be eligible to take the recovery rebate credit on your 2021 tax return for the difference. Keep in mind, however, that the 2021 recovery rebate credit is based on your 2021 income phasing out at the same income levels as a third stimulus check. You can see those amounts in the table on the screen here. So let's say that you're single with no dependents and you made $80,000 at your job in 2019 and 2020. Based on your income, you were not eligible to receive a third stimulus check. But even if you make the same $80,000 from your job in 2021, you may still be able to get that recovery rebate credit. How? Well, if you can somehow manage to get your 2021 adjusted gross income to $75,000 or below, you'd be eligible for the full $1,400 recovery rebate credit on your 2021 tax return. Maybe this means putting aside money now so you can contribute at least $5,000 to a traditional IRA for 2021, assuming you aren't covered by a retirement plan at work, which in this example would decrease your 2021 adjusted gross income to $75,000. This is an example of how a tax deduction can actually be worth more than usual, because in addition to the tax benefit for the deduction in and of itself, the deduction also makes you eligible for a credit that you wouldn't be otherwise eligible for. Double tax win. There are other ways to decrease your 2021 AGI to increase your eligibility for the 2021 recovery rebate credit. For example, if you typically receive a holiday bonus, perhaps you can ask your boss if you can receive it in January, right, rather than in December. Just a thought, right? Worth a try. My next strategy on how to prepare yourself for the upcoming tax season is to see if you qualify for tax benefits that are related to education. If you paid for your own or dependents' education in 2021, you may be eligible for some tax benefits for doing so, like the American Opportunity Tax Credit, which is a dollar-for-dollar credit available to those who pay qualified education expenses. To calculate the credit, you add the first $2,000 of qualified education expenses you paid for each eligible student during the year, plus 25% of the next $2,000 of qualified education expenses paid for that student. Mathematically, then, the credit reaches its $2,500 maximum once $4,000 of qualified educational expenses have been paid for that student. 40% of the American Opportunity Credit is partially refundable, meaning that even if the credit completely wipes out a taxpayer's tax liability for the year, they may still receive 40% of the credit back as a refund. The American Opportunity Credit maxes out at $2,500, can't be claimed for the same student for more than four tax years, and is phased out the income level shown in the table on screen. Feel free to pause the video to take that all in. If you have a 529 plan set up for yourself or your dependent, and you also meet the eligibility requirements for the American Opportunity Tax Credit, you'll want to put some thought into how you pay for educational expenses in 2021. Since you can't take the American Opportunity Tax Credit on money you withdraw tax-free from a 529 plan, it might make sense for you to pay for at least $2,000 and possibly $4,000 of educational expenses from non-529 plan funds so you can take the American Opportunity Credit on those expenses. Also, see if you qualify for the lifetime learning credit. Unlike the American Opportunity Credit, the lifetime learning credit can be claimed for the same student for any number of years, hence why it's called the lifetime learning credit. To calculate the credit, you simply multiply the amount of qualified education expenses you paid for all students during the year, up to $10,000, by 20%. Thus, the maximum lifetime learning credit a taxpayer can take during the year is $2,000. Unlike the American Opportunity Credit, none of the lifetime learning credit is refundable. If you still have credit remaining after your tax liability for the year is wiped out, that excess credit is lost. The lifetime learning credit is phased out the income level shown in the table on screen. So for example, if you're single and your AGI is $69,000 or more, you can't take this credit. Same thing for married individuals filing jointly with an AGI of $138,000 or more. There are some potential planning opportunities with the lifetime learning credit as well. For example, if you aren't in a rush to complete whatever degree you're working toward, you could potentially limit your current year educational expenses to $10,000 in order to take the 20% lifetime learning credit on all of them, and then pay, you know, for $10,000 of expenses next year to maximize the credit next year as well. Additionally, if you owe student loans taken out for your own, your spouse's, or your dependent's education, you may be eligible for a student loan interest deduction. To qualify, the individual whose education to load financed must be enrolled at least half-time in a program leading to a degree or other recognized credential. The definition of half-time varies from college to college and from university to university. So if the student isn't currently taking a full class load, might be worth it for them to confirm with their educational institution that they are in fact enrolled at least half time by the institution's definition. If they are not enrolled at least half time, they might want to consider increasing their course load to reach half time status so they or whoever claims them as a dependent can benefit from the student loan interest deduction. Student loan interest deduction maxes out at $2,500 a year and is phased out the income level shown in this table. So if you're single, make at least $85,000, you're not eligible for the deduction. Same thing if you're married filing jointly with an AGI of at least $170,000. Married filing separately, folks, sorry, you can't take this deduction. Also, along the topic of education, if you're an educator, you are allowed a deduction of up to $250 per year, $500 if you're married filing jointly and both spouses are educators. This is for unreimbursed expenses you incurred in doing your job. So let's say you're a single educator and by the end of 2022, you have to take some classes to maintain your credential or something like this. Although the cost of those classes is $500, your employer will not reimburse you for these expenses, but they do reimburse you for all other costs you incur in doing your job. Rather than waiting until the last minute and paying all $500 worth of classes next year, perhaps you want to take $250 worth of classes this year and the remaining $250 worth of classes next year in order to maximize your educator expense deduction. If you pay all $500 of expenses in 2022, you will only be able to deduct $250 of them in 2022. You won't be able to take any deduction in 2021 because you did not have any unreimbursed educator expenses in 2021. However, if you pay for $250 worth in 2021 and $250 in 2022, you will be able to take a $250 deduction each year for a total deduction of $500 across both years. Next strategy. If you're a parent, make sure you optimize your child tax credit on your 2021 tax return, especially taking into account the advance payments of this credit and the ability to opt out of them. So just for context, the American Rescue Plan significantly increased and expanded the child tax credit for the 2021 tax year. While previously the child tax credit was only for $2,000 for children up to the age of 16, with only $1,400 of the credit being refundable, the American Rescue Plan made the 2021 child tax credit $3,600 for children up to the age of 5, $3,000 for children between the ages of 6 and 17. While the income limitations for the original $2,000 portion of the child tax credit have not changed, beginning at $400K for married taxpayers filing jointly, $200K for other filers, the income limitations for the new $3,600, $3,000 portion of the child tax credit are much lower than this and are shown in this table. So it's possible if you have a high income that you might qualify only for the old $2,000 portion, but not the new $3,000 or $3,600 portion of the credit. Another change made to the child tax credit for tax year 2021 is that a portion of the credit is now payable in advance. Earlier this year, the IRS determined which parents were eligible for the 2021 child tax credit, at least based on the records they had, and began making payments to them in July. Payments will continue until December. The amount of each monthly payment is supposed to be 1/12 of the total 2021 child tax credit amount the IRS has deemed a parent or parents to be eligible for based on their last filed tax return. There are two major planning opportunities with respect to the child tax credit. The first planning opportunity has to do with determining whether or not you would like to continue receiving monthly payments from the IRS. If you do not, there is an option on the IRS website to opt out of receiving future monthly payments and instead claim your remaining child tax credit amount on your 2021 tax return. You may want to opt out of receiving monthly payments of the credit. For example, if you typically depend on your tax refund as a forced savings account, although this isn't ideal, and as a tax professional, I prefer that you have the money in your own bank, right, or you know, in your pocket so you can invest it throughout the year, I can understand why some taxpayers may want to get a large refund when they file their 2021 tax return rather than obtaining incremental deposits over the span of a few months. You may also want to opt out of receiving advance payments of the 2021 child tax credit if you are receiving them, but you know that your income will be over one or both child tax credit phase-out amounts. If this is the case, you may receive more in advance payments than the actual amount of the 2021 child tax credit you are eligible for. In this case, you may be required to pay back the difference between the monthly payment amounts you received and the actual amount of the 2021 child tax credit you are eligible for. However, if your 2021 adjusted gross income is below the figure in the second column in the table on screen for your filing status, you may qualify for full repayment protection, meaning that you will not have to pay back any excess amount of the 2021 child tax credit you received as monthly payments. And if your 2020 adjusted gross income is below the figure in the third column in the table you see on screen for your filing status, you may qualify for partial repayment protection. Even if you don't necessarily opt out of the monthly payments in this situation, it's still important for you to know that you may be required to pay a portion of the credit you received in advance back when you file your tax return for the year so you aren't hit with a surprise tax bill when you file. Also, it's important for parents to keep in mind that Congress has not yet extended this expanded child tax credit into tax years 2022 and beyond, though some Democrats in Congress, as well as the president himself, are pushing for this. Finally, my last strategy is for those of you who work from home as a freelancer or a side hustler or something like that. If you've been working remotely for yourself, you may be eligible for work from home tax benefits, so make sure you understand these. While W-2 employees and 1099 freelancers alike used to be able to potentially take some tax benefits for working from home, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed in 2017 eliminated these benefits for most W-2 employees. Freelancers and other small business owners, however, still have the ability to take several tax deductions for working from home. For example, there's a home office deduction. If you regularly work from home in an area exclusively used for your freelancing business, you are likely eligible to take the home office deduction for that area. Calculating the home office deduction is simple. You simply multiply your housing costs, such as rent payments or mortgage interest, homeowners or renters insurance, your property taxes, utilities, etc., by the proportion of your living space used as your home office. So, example, let's say you rent a 2-bedroom, 1,000 square foot apartment for $2,000 a month, which comes out to $24,000 per year. You also pay $200 a year for renter's insurance. You incur no other costs for housing, so your annual housing expense is $24,200. Let's say you sleep in the larger 200 square foot bedroom and use a smaller 150 square foot bedroom as your home office. You work in this spare bedroom every day, and working is the only thing you do in this bedroom. This last part is key. In order for a space to qualify as a home office, you must use it regularly and exclusively for your business. So working on your laptop in the bed you sleep in would not qualify your bedroom for the home office deduction. In this example, you use 15% of your apartment as a home office. That's 150 home office square feet divided by 1,000 total apartment square feet. Multiplying 15% by your annual housing expenses of $24,200 gives you a $3,630 home office deduction. IRS also lets you use a simplified home office deduction method that involves simply multiplying the square footage of your home office by $5,000 per square foot, up to $300 square feet. In this case, using the simplified method would only yield a home office deduction of $750, so you would be better off using the standard method. Knowing this information about the home office deduction provides some planning opportunities. If you don't currently have a space you use regularly and exclusively in your small business, consider setting one up. Even if you can't spare an entire room, perhaps you could partition off a portion of a room and use that space regularly and exclusively in your business so it qualifies for the home office deduction. And even if you do currently have a qualifying home office space, perhaps you can consider using a larger space for your home office in order to maximize your deduction. The example I used previously, you may want to use a larger bedroom as your home office in order to increase your home office deduction and then sleep in the smaller bedroom. Also, kind of last thought here, if you have your own business or you freelance, it's also not a bad idea if you start tracking your automobile expenses. If you have a home office and you have to drive to meet clients around town, keep track of your mileage because it could save you quite a bit of tax time. Similar to the home office deduction, there are two ways to calculate your automobile expenses. The first and more simple way is to simply multiply the number of miles you drive during the year by the standard mileage rate for the year. In 2021, this rate is 56 cents per mile. Alternatively, you could divide the number of miles you drove your car for your business during the year by the total number of miles you drove your car total during the year. The resulting percentage is your business use percentage for your car. You could then add up all the actual vehicle expenses you incurred during the year, such as, you know, gas and repairs and maintenance and insurance, and multiply the sum of these expenses by your business percentage for the vehicle. And assuming you own rather than lease the vehicle, you can also take a depreciation deduction on it if you use this actual expense method. All right, folks, those are some tax strategies you can implement or at least look into now before the end of the year to minimize your 2021 tax liability and put more money in your pocket and less in Uncle Sam's. If you'd like to check out more of my tax-related videos, check out my video on LLCs right over here, right? Do LLCs really save you on taxes? As well as my video where I review the TurboTax tax software right down here. See you in those videos, everybody. Bye-bye.